Hi, and welcome to my podcast. I shouldn't say this, but my name is Katie Leeson, and I'm Managing Director of Social Chain UK. And it's my absolute pleasure to bring you this podcast this week. I sat down and recorded a live Q&A with Manchester Young Professionals a couple of weeks back, in which there were so many fantastic questions that I wanted to ensure that I could share them with you all. I cover topics like career development during a pandemic, how Social Chain has made changes to make ourselves better during COVID, and also just a general chit chat about career progression, development, entrepreneurialism, and also being your best self. So sit back, relax, and enjoy this episode of I Shouldn't Say This But.
So thanks very much, firstly, for everybody joining us today. We're really excited for tonight. This is a one-off for us to get a special guest, Katie. Joined us, Katie's MD of Social Chain. I'm sure you all know her story and her background. We're really lucky to have her talking to us today. We wanted to bring something to everyone that was kind of relevant at this point with regards to what's going on in the world, and specifically for Manchester, and hopefully to give some insight from Katie into some key topics that we think are relevant and that would help you. So we're going to do it in a kind of question format. So before I miss anything out, we've got four key topics we're going to cover. We're going to cover company culture, communication, personal brand, and career progression. So without further ado, I'd like to introduce Katie Leeson.
Thanks. Thank you so much for having me. Hi, everyone. Yeah, if you don't know me, my name's Katie, and I'm Managing Director of Social Chain UK. I've been with Social Chain for coming up to 4 years now, so I've seen it grow from about 30 people to the 250 plus that we've got now across UK and the US, and then a few in Germany as well. Yeah, 15 years in media and marketing as well, which is crazy. I don't know where that time's gone.
So, no, it's great to have you with us. Obviously, the topic tonight is adapting and learning in this unprecedented time. And as I said, the four topics there. We start with company culture and just have a talk about how, you know, your perspective on company culture and how you guys have responded.
Yeah, I think for us, if you know much about Social Chain, we talk a lot about our culture, and we put a lot of emphasis on the culture and the staff and how we look after people, and we offer loads of things, and the office is really cool. I think one of the things that I've really learned from lockdown is that culture doesn't just mean that you put a slide in the office and then that's that, and you don't just have dogs running around and that's culture done and dusted. I think for me, one of my biggest learnings in lockdown is making sure that you speak to people, you keep them engaged, and we use Workplace, Facebook Workplace, as our way to keep talking to each other. And we've kept things up, like we do creative review on a Friday where we talk about the great work but also have a few games. So we've done some quite fun stuff virtually, and it's been really important that we continue to keep that feel, the culture feel, as we now start moving into, Rich and I hate this term, we were talking about the other day, the new normal. If anyone can come up with a better term for new normal, please let me know, because I absolutely hate it. But it is, yeah, whatever the new normal will be. But been a big learning for me that you can't just stuff in an office and expect that your culture is that. I think you really have to have your culture off the values of the company. So our values are to be first, fearless and ever-changing, a selfless, rather funny and ironic right now, contagious family. And we didn't really think about the contagious bit, obviously, there was going to be a pandemic. But we try and live everything through those values, and that's where the culture needs to come from.
In terms of building on that, communication's obviously become a massive part of how we're having to think differently about that, because we're not together in person, clearly, as businesses and as communities. Could you talk about community and communication as well, please?
Yeah, again, I think we ran into the lockdown and the pandemic like a bull in a china shop, and we ran at it so quickly. We were trying very much to do all we could just to safeguard everything at the beginning, and what we quickly realized was that it was really tricky. And I think the longer it's gone on, it's become more obvious that it's hard to keep everyone communicating because we've got such a big team now. Unless you're constantly working on different projects, if you're just working in the sphere of your team or your department, leaders of business really have to make a concerted effort to ensure that communication happens across company. So we've done stuff now where we do like coffee mornings with different groups, so that we've got a happiness team. If you don't know, we've got a couple of people in our happiness team who are there responsible for happiness. They're not HR, we've got HR, but they're very much there to ensure that the culture lives. And they pick people from different parts of the office. But also the beauty of lockdown and us all working remotely has meant that we can include people from the US. So we've managed to communicate actually better with our colleagues in the US than we would have done when we were in the office and we're also insular in our own work. We've got a few people on furlough as well, and I think it's really important for leaders to keep that narrative going with people who aren't working or are on furlough, just to make them feel like they're part of the company still and there's no concerns, because I can imagine that it can get quite lonely if you aren't working. So for me, honest, open communication has been the biggest skill that I've had to really push in leadership during lockdown, just to make sure that everybody knows what's going on. We can keep talking to each other. We can keep that culture and we can make sure everyone's engaged and involved.
What would you say, Katie, around the future of communication and how we should all think about learning and changing and adapting to what is the new world?
Yeah, I mean, we're looking now at how our working days and weeks are going to be. So I think we're going to be opening the office up slowly with hot desk type things, that like a set number of desks that then get deep cleaned at the end of the day. So we're still going to be in this mode of remote working. I've always said that I don't really care where the work happens, as long as it's being done and people are happy. My main thing is happy, is someone being happy in their job, because you know that if someone's happy in their job, they're going to put as much as they can into it. So for me, location has never really been a big thing. And I think communicating for us, I think, again, speaking as a leader and speaking as someone who looks after other people, you've got to really communicate that trust and not make people feel like this. The thing of, I always say this wrong, but presenteeism, the fact that there's a feeling that you should be in the office just to show that you're busy. I think we're lucky now that lockdown has completely wiped that out, but it is the role of just communicating with people, because you don't want to be lonely either, and you want to keep learning and you want to keep developing, but also you want to make sure that you and your team are surviving and you're getting the best out of people. So yeah, for me, it's about communicating that trust and ensuring people feel comfortable to know that they can work where they want, but also raise issues as well. It's like a two-way street.
No, that's great. And we've got a question actually. Tom just asked the question. Thanks, Tom. How do you think team meetings will work in this hybrid form of new normal, i.e. half employees in the office and half out of the office? Do you think there'll be an inclusion issue for those who are working remotely, almost FOMO?
It's so tricky to know, isn't it? I think for me, the dream with having people in the office is so we can allow collaboration. So when we're doing creative work and we're doing creative sessions, obviously you can't be in meeting rooms at the moment anyway, but having that team in the office to work on that project together would be my dream. So there isn't that FOMO. But we're all doing it now, and I can't imagine there being that. I think if you're in control of where you're working and why, it's down to you to get involved and make sure you're part of it. I think it should be okay. It's just really tricky. I always, I've said since the beginning of the pandemic, usually what I do is I turn to my dad. So if there's something that's going on in the company that I need a bit of advice on, I'll go to my dad and ask, like, what would you advise in this situation? Or I'd ask someone like a mentor or someone who's been in business longer than I have. But with this, it's just so unknown. No one's ever been through anything like this in our lifetime. So I couldn't tell you. All that I hope is that everyone just still feels like they're part of the culture and the creativity, and all that doesn't change from the changing circumstances.
just on that, a question for me, just you touched on furlough a moment ago, and we were aware quite a few of our friends and so on in Manchester have been placed on furlough. Is there any advice you could give to your staff who've been on furlough, you know, to focus on in this time, which is really, really difficult?
Yes, there is. And I'll talk a little bit more about values in a bit, but it can't be easy. And I've just been ever so grateful to those people who have gone on furlough. Obviously, we do productions and things like that, and we couldn't do that. We can't do productions outside, so we had no choice. And we had a few clients that pushed spending back into later in the year. So it made certain things a little bit trickier for us. So I was very grateful that the furlough scheme was there. What I tried to really reiterate to those people that we did put on furlough is the help that they were giving the company. So instead of making them feel like they were just put on furlough and their job wasn't important, it was more like, I'm very grateful that they have been so good about taking furlough for us to enable us to continue for the benefit of the company long term. We've put quite a lot of training programs in place and encourage people to do different training bits and just help them really understand who they are and where they want to be. I think it's a great time if you, I know financially it's not, but if you're on furlough and you're kind of thinking about what your next career step should be or where you should be going, if you're not 100% happy in what you're doing, it gives you that break to be able to really think about what you want to do and what's going to make you happy. And then you can start putting those building blocks in place now. I don't think we'll ever have this time again. So if you're not happy, it's a great opportunity to find what it is that makes you happy, I guess.
Definitely. No, definitely. And I think there's another question from Alex relating to the above question. At team meetings / training sessions, it's really easy to network with someone new. If you sat on the table with them, how would you recommend to build up your professional networks with having the meetings virtually instead? Thanks, Alex.
Yeah, I think that's a good question. I do a lot of what I do on LinkedIn. And I think LinkedIn's definitely got a place in this virtual world. There's a lot on there that's very salesy, so you've got to be very careful. But I think it's the same as anything. If you go with a value proposition of why you want to speak to someone, people will be willing to help you. So I would, I definitely think LinkedIn is an opportunity for that. Yeah, I'd say LinkedIn probably is an alternative to networking events.
And Gabrielle has asked the question, how do you ensure that people in junior positions are able to learn and develop in the current environment, considering that people are working from home and that human interaction is currently not an option? Thanks, Gabriella.
I don't know what industry you work in, Gabrielle, so it's a bit difficult for me to say, but I would have a look at thought leaders within the space on social that you really admire. I've seen quite a lot of free training sessions throughout lockdown and things like that, where people have put on sessions to help people. So I would look at people that you admire, areas that you want to learn. Start watching TED Talks. Also, there's so much collateral online to learn new things. But again, I don't know which industry it is, so I can't tell you specifically. But one big thing, and I will talk about this, and I keep saying it, is knowing your values. But I'll cover that in a question further on. I won't jump ahead.
That's a question, which is, I think you mentioned this in one of your podcasts, actually, at this topic around in the advertising space, what change have you seen from clients in terms of marketing spend? Is the confidence still there? And then what platforms and channels have they shifted spending to?
We have been very fortunate because people's attention shifted into social. So when they weren't outside, and obviously outdoor has taken a hit, and I was talking to someone the other day about TV production. Now's the normal time when big Christmas ads start going into production, but obviously that can't happen in the same way. So there's definitely been a shift. For us, in terms of spend, we had some really big clients decide that they weren't going to spend until the third quarter. But then also we've had some clients now that have decided to join in the boycott on Facebook. So we have had to pivot a little bit based on that. We looked at our offering, we looked at new business. We were very lucky that we got some new clients during the last few months. So for us, yes, we're not doing the growth that we wanted to do and we projected, but we're doing reasonably well in a very difficult market. People were very skeptical about spending at first and were worried about the types of messaging they were putting out there. I think you can see it from the creative over time. So if you look back at the beginning of lockdown, the start of the creatives from TV ads and any sort of ads really was very much like this supportive, we are here, we're all together. It got a bit midway through lockdown, I think we were all a little bit over it, and that sort of like feeling of sympathy was like people just wanted entertaining then. So you saw the creative change, but I think a lot of brands stepped back and tried to not spend out of fear, and I think that was a mistake.
Moving on just to the next point in the list, this is what I'm looking forward to hearing about. It's about your personal brand.
Well, obviously, if you know Steve, Steve's got an amazing personal brand. And what Steve brings to the company, Social Chain, is he brings in so much new business and so many opportunities because of the brand that he's built. And so the thing with me, I started at Social Chain after not knowing anything about social media. My background was in press, radio, outdoor buying, and then I was doing new business for a traditional Big Four agency. So I moved to Social Chain because I understood my values, one of which was learning, and I wanted to learn about digital, otherwise I knew I'd get left behind. And I took on this role of ops director. I didn't start as MD, and I was only there for 3 months before they asked me to apply for a more senior role. And I was like, why would they want me to do it when I have no clue? I was still trying to get my head around what exactly Social Chain did. But I'm a bit of a determined person. So I did the interview and I got the job. But for even after I was made managing director, I spent a lot of time panicking that I would get caught out. I would be found out. Someone would be sat there in a meeting saying, why is she here? She's not good enough. She doesn't know what she's talking about. And Social Chain are incredibly open and helpful with personal development in terms of counselling and therapy. So I started to see a therapist, and she identified with me something called imposter syndrome. And I'm sure you've all heard of imposter syndrome now, but I hadn't at the time. And imposter syndrome is that feeling of being a fraud, and it's a fear of being found out for not being good enough. 70% of successful people actually suffer from imposter syndrome. So it's very normal. And the people that have also had it are Albert Einstein, Meryl Streep. So we're in good company. So I actually got up on stage and started talking about my imposter syndrome. I started writing articles at first and they got great traction. And I stood up on stage and did my story about imposter syndrome. The thing that really pushed me into it was the fact that I Googled managing director, and the Google images that came up were all men in suits. There was no women. The first woman that came up under that managing director image, Google image search, was a Getty image at the time. I don't think it's changed too much now. And that was the thing that fueled me. So I'm a big believer in you can't be what you can't see. And if I've got this position, I need to put myself out there and out of my comfort zone in order to be able to give other people the vision that you can achieve things as well. So that's why I started the personal brand, because the responses I got from people after talking about imposter syndrome and doing that first talk, I actually helped one lady get a new job because she knew she wasn't in the right thing and she didn't know how to do it. And she then messaged me saying she'd found a dream job. And that was the reason why I started it. And then the podcast was born. So the podcast is called I Shouldn't Say This But, and it's pretty much because I'm far too honest and I say things that I probably shouldn't say as an MD. So I talk a lot about my personal life, challenges that I face as a leader, all sorts of daft things as well. So yeah, the personal brand is, it's not easy and it still pushes me to that imposter syndrome, but I now embrace the imposter, whereby I know that if I've got that little voice inside my head that's saying you can't do it, it means that I'm pushing myself and it means that I'm going to learn and develop from it. So it's a good way of looking at the imposter syndrome. But yeah, it's a dual purpose. It gets new business for the agency and also helps other people know that they can achieve things that they want to achieve.
Just a quick question on that before we move on to the next bit for me is, how much of your time would you spend in a week? Because obviously that's been a really helpful journey for you to go on to then understand it, to then do something about it. how much of your time would you spend on that in a normal week?
It's been trickier in lockdown. I usually have a team of people that, well, our team's like one or two people that help me with the editing and the sorting out of the podcast, and I've had to do it myself. So the beauty of having the podcast is that that fuels all of my content for the week. So it's not a massive amount of my time that's taken up. So we record it and we film it as well, and then we'll take chunks of it and then put that out on the social channels across the week. So it's not actually as much time as you would think.
No, good. It's good. I just conscious that everyone's busy in their jobs, aren't they? And it's sometimes they're busy in the jobs, and at least gives the view that you have to cut the time out to make it happen, else it doesn't happen.
Yeah, and for me as well, that's not something that I want to be doing at the expense of helping the staff at Social Chain. So it's not something that, like, the personal brand isn't there, and I don't help other people. It's more, I use a very small amount of time and use it really wisely.
And then the final point is on career progression, especially with what's going on right now, where people, like you touched on before, have got an opportunity to sit back, even if you are still working and you are at home more, for example, to look at your career and look at what the thing for you long term is. So you could talk to us about that, I'd be really interested.
Yeah, of course. My career progression, so from a personal experience point of view, I haven't taken a straight up ladder. When I take a step back and look at how I've got to where I've got to, it's been sometimes sideways steps, sometimes diagonal steps. And the reason that now, looking back on it, the reason that I've taken those is because one of my values and one of the things that makes me tick is learning and constantly learning and developing. So my job moves have all been around learning. So I took one job to move into a bigger agency to learn about bigger clients. And then within that company, I took a sideways job to do a different department so I could learn about the commercial side of the business. And then I took a diagonal leap into Social Chain because I needed to learn about social. So for me, it was one really key thing about career progression at the moment, I think, is understanding your values and what makes you tick. There's an amazing couple of resources that I want to share with you. One is a company called Amazing If and their podcast Squiggly Careers. And that very much falls in line with what I've just said, that it used to be that we used to have it drummed into us that you'd start a job and then you'd climb that career ladder and then that'd be the thing for success. Whereas now our jobs all do these sort of what they call squiggly careers. And they've got some incredible tools on their website, but also their podcast is amazing at just being helped to define who you are, what your strengths are, best ways of getting feedback that help you get to where you want to get to, and also understanding your values. Once I took a step back and understood my values, I knew, one, it really helped with my imposter syndrome, actually, because I knew that my values were learning, they were humour, they were caring, and that your values are the things that really make you tick, but also drive you forward. So for me, my best advice on career progression is taking a step back from thinking, what is the job I want to do, to understanding yourself, and then really finding what that passion point is, and then making the job fit the passion. And then the other thing, the other resource I've got, it is a book actually, is this lady, Kubi, has written a book called I Am My Brand. And this will help you define your personal brand, not so you can go out and be Instagram famous or have loads of followers on LinkedIn. You can, of course, do that. But this book is all about how to build yourself and understand yourself so you can get to that stage in your career. So I'd recommend that book as well.
Great, thanks, Katie. We had a question. Andrew's asked a question about how important is LinkedIn, as you touched on a moment ago, as part of building up your personal brand? And I think a lot of people are in this place. How do you start?
Yeah, I started with understanding my why. I didn't want to start just putting stuff out on LinkedIn that was the same as everyone else. And I needed to really understand what my reason for doing it was. So it took me a bit of time to really step out and put my head above the parapet, because obviously I've got Steve as a comparison who is absolutely immense, but he's got his own niche. And if you look at mine, it's very different in terms of I'll share social updates and I'll share things like that, but my actual topics that I talk about are different to Steve's topics. And that's because it's true to me. So if you're going to do it, really think about what your why is. and understand the reason that you want to do it rather than just jumping in there to try and get a lot of followers. My biggest pieces of content have always been very reaction-based. So the biggest ones that I've had have been when I've managed to jump on something that's happened very quickly, one of which was the Starbucks Game of Thrones cup. And then the other things that have always worked really well is where I've just been super honest, talked about myself, talked about my experiences, but it's all linked in with this why, which is my why is to help other people to see that they can, like I am normal and managing directors are normal people and senior people are normal people, to try and knock down that barrier of an old man in a grey suit, which is what I envisaged when I started the role.
Yeah, just building on that as a question, how important is it to build in, on top of thinking about career progression and your values, a mentor within your career?
I think mentors are incredibly important if you can find the right one. I wouldn't say that I actually have a mentor at the moment. There's different people I go to for different things. So I mentioned my dad before. My dad is probably one of my mentors. And then I've got people that I also work with on a similar level, just at different companies, that I can go to for certain bits of advice. And there's a lady called Karen Blackett, who was, at the time when I was at Mediacom, she was one of the chairwomen of Mediacom. And she said to me once that it's really important to have your cheerleaders around you as well as mentors and people that can help you step forward, because they're the ones that will back you and help you feel like you're doing the right thing. But mentorship is really tricky. And I think you've got to really think about who it is that you want to mentor you and why. And also you've got to really connect with that person, because otherwise you won't get out of it what you need. So I only mentor one person, and that's because I get on with her really well and there's a connection there. It wouldn't be right for me to mentor people that there's not common ground, or it's just a really tricky one.
Got a question from Duncan. Thanks, Duncan. What advice would you give someone who feels like they understand their values but struggle to find the role that fits? People often ask why he wants to do something, whereas he feels he knows my why more and struggle to articulate that in an exact role or industry.
Oh, that's a good one. Maybe, Duncan, you've not been going for the right roles if you can't match your why with the role. I think understanding yourself and bringing that personal aspect to any job interview, looking at the company culture as well, so matching your values up with the company culture that you're going for, will stand you in good stead. At Social Chain, we're quite strict on recruitment in terms of we've got a massive variety of people from different backgrounds and we pride ourselves in that. But the one commonality with all of us is that we all have similar cultural feelings and we all merge quite well together. We're like a dysfunctional family. And it's funny because, as I say, we've got different people from different backgrounds, but everyone seems to get on. It's really cliche to call yourselves a family, but it is. And I've seen memes about it recently about how it can't be true, but it actually is in our place. So maybe it's the wrong company or the wrong role that you've been looking at, Duncan, potentially. But stay true to your why. Don't deviate from it. But even now, if it's a stepping stone, it could be a role that could take you into your next thing. Don't be afraid, because I know the job market, I know it's very tough at the minute. So don't always think of things as forever.
Sam's just asked a question. Is there a risk of moving roles at this stage, given the expected financial downturn? And would you recommend that Sam stays where they are for the moment and be basically bored for 6 months to a year? Sam's not very happy in the role.
That's tough, Sam, and I know it's not easy if you're not happy in your company. Again, it's tricky because I don't know the company, I don't know the situation or the market. I would really have a look at the market that you work in and just see how that's performing. I've noticed this week that there are more job vacancies going up in creative and content and social. So I can't really give you too much advice unless I know the market, but I would take a step back, look at the health of the sector that you work in, and if it feels like you are safe for staying where you are for 6 more months and getting your head down and just trying to learn new skills on the side, Amazing If actually did a training course with us, and they talked about the different levels of zones that we work in, and the bottom obviously being comfort zone, and how there's a bit of a negative association with being in your comfort zone. But there are certain times in our lives when that comfort zone is the right place to work in. And maybe if you they decide that the job industry is too much of a risk to move, don't punish yourself for being in that comfort zone, because you can look at other learning opportunities to get yourself up into that growth mindset zone.
George has asked a question: what is the best advice for going into a new place and managing a new team and being taken seriously from the beginning?
Be yourself, don't try and be anyone else. I am not a big believer in this sort of, like, you as a female especially, like being that sort of boss bitch, strong character. I think my strength comes from the fact that I am who I am, and people gain trust that way. So my big advice would just be yourself, show willing, listen as well. If you've got a team, really listen to their experiences and start off that way and understand what they want to get out of their role, what they're struggling with at the moment. And then you can then from there start to figure out what you can do as a leader for those people to make the changes that are going to make them happier in their roles. And as soon as you do that and you actually prove that you've done what you said you're going to do, then you'll be absolutely flying. Because there's certain things that I live by, and one of the biggest things I live by is treat people like you want to be treated. I don't want someone who's going to man-manage me, so I don't man-manage the team. I don't want someone clock-watching where I am, so I don't do it to them. I treat the team like I want to be treated, and like an adult, which sometimes can go a bit amiss.
Andrew's asked, what's the biggest lesson that you've learned as MD?
Oh, God, I don't even know. That everything will be all right in the end. I think I was a massive worrier, a huge, huge worrier. I'd worry about everything and the things I couldn't control, and it drive me crazy, like not sleeping, struggled with migraines, stressed out. And I think I am a lot calmer now. And one of those reasons is because I know things will be okay. It's just things will just work out if I'm true to myself and I do all I can for my team. So, even when you're faced with tough times like we have been, just having that sort of knowing yourself, being honest, being true to who you are, and making sure that the team know that is probably one of the biggest lessons I've learned as an MD. It's all that trust thing and honesty in your communication.
And then Andy asked a question, not the same Andrew, Andy. In the times where you've doubted yourself and your confidence may have taken a hit, what techniques and processes have you used to get through?
I still doubt myself. I still do. There's a few things that I try and think about if I'm doubting my own confidence. Now I just take that leap because I've learned that it's better to try and fail and learn from it than it is to not do it, which sounds like it's easier said than done. But with like the personal brand, I really, really didn't want to do it. I'm still not incredibly comfortable on camera. And I was really, really super nervous in my first talk to stand up in front of all those people and do a presentation. I thought I was going to get all my words wrong. I was going to forget things. I could trip over. All this stuff goes through your mind. But because I did it, and then I've done it again, and then I've done it again, and I did the same talk a few times because I felt comfortable with it. Then I had the same fear as I did at the beginning when I changed my talk, and then I've done another one recently. The first time that I do that talk is absolutely petrifying. So I try and do it on a smaller scale. So I try and do it as like a test thing. And then I know that I can take that talk out to bigger stages because I've become more comfortable with the presentation style. So it's practice. Practice makes perfect. It's such a cliche, but it really is. And it takes that fear away once you've done it once and twice and three times.
We've got a couple of questions that came in beforehand. One was around promotions and pay rises, and especially in this time we're in, what would you recommend in terms of how people go about doing that? Would you do it differently than you normally would, or would you just continue as you normally would to do that?
I think it's super important at the moment to be really aware of the situation that your company is in, as well as your personal circumstances. So, as I said at the beginning, this is a time that none of us ever predicted and none of us budgeted for. So it's understanding your company's situation. There's obviously, as a leader, I want to give people as much money as I could and it'd be an absolute dream, but there are restrictions and sign-offs and all sorts of things like that that you've got to consider. And if you've got people that are on furlough or if your company are making people redundant, there's a reason for that. They need that support to help the company. So it could be best waiting, getting your case together, and really like getting your achievements set, knowing what you're going to go in with, and then asking for a promotion or a pay rise later on in the year or next year when you might get more out of it than you would now. And a big thing for me as well is also understanding why you would want that promotion. I think I hear so often that people want to be managers. I want to be a manager. I want to get to manager. But the actual reality of why and what comes with people management, it isn't that fun. It's not because people, no one's the same as you and no one's going to react the same way as you do a lot of the time. And I think people management is the hardest thing that you can ever do. So I think understand why you want that promotion. Is it just to say that you've been promoted to a manager, or is it because you really want to help someone else with their career? So yeah, for me, have a look at the situation you're in, look at the company, assess whether it's the right time. Everyone deserves it if they're working hard, but unfortunately we're just in such strange circumstances that it's not always possible, even if people really want to and companies really want to.
That's brilliant, Katie. Thank you very much, just to say, for joining us, and it's been really insightful, and we do appreciate you coming on, and obviously thanks to everyone for joining. I know it's a bit strange on this format, but we appreciate you spending the time to do that. Normally we'd be out in spinning fields, hopefully having drinks, etc., at an event at this point. But unfortunately we're here, but the future hopefully looks bright, and like I said, appreciate everyone for joining.
Take care, everyone.